Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Vertical Momentum. I am your host, Richard Kaufman, also known as the Comeback Coach. Guys, this is going to be a fun episode. If you love veterans, if you love music, this is going to be the episode for you. First, I want to thank our sponsors for today. One of our best sponsors, and he's also a veteran, has an apparel company called Authentically American, where all his t-shirts and all his swag are made in the United States. So definitely check them out at Authentically American, and 10% of their of all the sales go to help veterans and first responders struggling with depression, PTSD, and several other issues. So definitely check them out. Guys, this is going to be a great episode. As you guys know, I love having artists on. I had Jax Young on a while ago. Had some more people coming up. But this gentleman is one of my favorite new country artists that I love. And he's also a veteran. So I got to get it all to him. Doug, my brother, what's going on?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man. You know what? I knew I was going to have you on today. And I watched every video that I could find, every song that I can listen to. Bro, you have an amazing talent.
Thank you.
You are truly, truly awesome. Now, I'm a big country guy. I'm that old school country guy. I like some old Tim McGraw. You know, I'm a big Travis guy. So, and of course, you know, you got to love Garth. So
when you're saying old country, like you're talking 90s, when I think old country, I'm thinking back to the 70s, man. I'm thinking about, you know, guys like Buck Owens or Merle or Waylon or.
Oh, I love Merle. Merle Haggard. Yeah, buddy.
Hell yeah.
I love that stuff, man. And I love outlaw country. But then I also, you know, one reason I love like some of the artists that I mentioned is that they're kind of like you where they tell a story in their music. It's not just, you know, I lost my wife, I lost my house, I lost my car. You know, they actually have stories, and I think that's one thing that's really that you're really gifted at is telling a story through your music. So were you always an artist? Did you always like certain music, or did you like rock at all? Did you like any other forms of music besides country?
Well, I never set out to be a country artist, and even today, I'm not sure I'm a country artist. It's funny, depending on, you know, the word country means something very different depending on who you're talking to, and so in some circles, they would say I'm more of a Americana artist, perhaps, you know. But no, I grew up with a very eclectic taste in music. My dad was into like all of the old 60s folk era, you know, Kingston Trio, Peter, Paul and Mary, you know, those folks. So that was part of the upbringing. And of course, you know, I grew up in South Texas. And so, you know, you always have, you know, Willie Nelson and George Strait going on in the background. But my first artistic love was Billy Joel. And I got hooked on Billy Joel's music at probably 7 years old, and still would count him as my favorite artist.
You know, I grew up, you know, I'm actually like 50 minutes from Manhattan, and he sold out the Garden, I think, like 100 and something times. And my wife really loves Billy Joel, but I get also his music. It's all about storytelling.
Right. And I think that's something that always struck me. The people in his songs always feel like real people. You know, Anthony worked at the grocery store. You feel like you know Anthony, you know. James, you are my brother. You know, I feel like I know James. I feel like I know all of these characters. You know, when he sings Piano Man and he's going through the bar, I'm pretty sure I've met some of those people. So yeah, Billy Joel was a huge one, and then around high school, I got really into Pink Floyd, which again, very focused on their storytelling, although they're a little bit weirder about it. I didn't necessarily set out to write anything particularly country or Americana. That's just the way The soundtrack of my life shaped the music that I wrote.
So what kind of, you know, we're gonna hop in the Wayback Machine now.
Okay.
So what kind of little boy was Doug as a little boy?
I'm told, and looking back, I think I can see this, that I was a very angry child. When I was 8 years old, my mom was in a severe car accident, suffered a traumatic brain injury, and so my childhood was largely filled with, you know, dealing with that, and you know, my dad was not particularly around for a lot of it, and my brother and sister were much older than me. So when I've heard people describe me as a child, it seems like there was always extremes of being an angry child, but also being a super affectionate, needy one. And I think that looking back, that makes a lot of sense if you think about a child who's experiencing the trauma of, you know, his mom having a TBI and basically coming back as a completely different person.
Yep, I understand that, because I have a TBI, so I totally get that. So now, like, when I was a kid, because I grew up a very abused child, mm-hmm. My go-to was reading books. I became addicted to reading books, and it was a way for me to get out of my life and live different lives through my books. What were your coping mechanisms?
Well, so music was very briefly. I was taking music piano lessons when mom had her accident, and probably only lasted about a year after that, and then decided I just was fed up with it. And poor Mrs. Droth. I'll never forget Nina Droth. She was my piano teacher, and she's to blame for everything that happened afterwards with me becoming a musician. Really, my grandparents were probably the biggest help for me in coping through that whole time. They had 3 acres of land out, you know, in a small town in Texas. And so I would go out there and just run around on their, I hesitate to call it a farm, but on their property. And grandpa would hand me a shovel, and I would just go dig a hole for no particular reason, and just run around and be a child. I got really into Legos, and then later on into, you know, role playing games and all of that fun stuff. But
so, what kind of kid were you in high school?
By the time we got to high school, I realized unequivocally that I was not going to be an athlete. So I threw myself into every form of artistic expression that I could get into. I got into theater. I got into choir. I was really involved in band as a saxophone player. I was nerdy. I was like cool among some of the nerdy kids, if that makes any sense.
Yep. Cause my wife, she all through high school, she was in the band, saxophone player. So I totally understand.
And very obsessed with women, with girls. I lived and breathed for the pretty girls. In fact, that's actually why I started playing. That's one of the reasons why I started playing piano again, was because I realized I was never going to be an athlete. But if I played piano around the choir girls, they would all gather around me and we could sing show tunes together. And suddenly it's me and 20 beautiful choir girls.
So now, did you get a scholarship for colleges or anything like that?
No, I didn't. Actually, I went directly from high school to the military.
Now, hold on before you start, you know, because I said, you know, I've interviewed hundreds of people on the show now, and everyone has a different recruiting story. So talk to me about the day you went to your recruiter.
Well, he actually came to the school because he was recruiting specifically for Army Band, and which is what I ultimately did, as I joined the Army Band. And man, he saw me coming a mile away. Looking back, he read me clearly. So I was raised as a Navy brat. My dad was career Navy. And so I just was absolutely adamant I was never going to join the military. So this recruiter comes in and he starts talking about the military bands, and I just decided to be an arrogant ass and, you know, started kind of messing with him a little bit. And he goes, well, you know, most people don't make it through the audition process. So immediately he's playing on my ego right there. He's like, well, you probably can't do it anyway, you know. So he asks me a few softball music theory questions, and I answered them. He's like, oh, well, maybe you have what it takes. So now my ego is all inflated. And he's like, well, you know, I know you're not interested. Why don't you come in and you can take a practice ASVAB test, you know? So I went to the recruiting station and just to see if I could. I'm like, I'm not going to join. I'm just, you know, I don't have anything better to do. So then I took the test and he got it back, and typical recruiting story. Oh my gosh, I can't believe you got that score. I didn't even know it went that high.
so you crushed it on the ASVAB.
Well, this was the pre-ASVAB. And so he's just like talking me up and feeding my ego left and right. And I'm just eating it up, just absolutely eating it up. So he talks me into taking the real ASVAB, and I scored a 90 on it. And so then he's like, well, you know, you still got to get through your band audition. And all this time, I had been thinking, well, I'm not really doing this. But, you know, he just kind of kept egging me on with, well, let's just see. And so I took my Army band audition on saxophone. And it's graded on a 4-point scale. And I failed it by 1/100th of a point. And I used to remember the guy, the sergeant's name who auditioned me. He's a tuba player, and I can't remember him offhand, but I ran into him in my brief career. But he just looked at me, he goes, well, I could spend the time auditioning you again, and I know you're going to pass. And so he just kind of fudged one of the scores to give me a passing grade, and that was it. At that point, I had the affirmation and the acceptance and everything, and I was like, all right, I'm going to be an Army band. So I'd gone from this recruiter took me, just fed my ego, and I went from no way I'm ever joining the military to sweet mom, look what I just did. I just swore into the Army.
So now, because I've had some people that were in the band and stuff, and I never asked this question. I don't know why, but what was basic training like? Is it any different?
No, went to Fort Jackson, did the same.
Jackson.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. But
that's where I retired out of. So I love Fort Jackson.
No, it was fine. It was just a normal basic training. You have to do it. We have, you know, you're soldiers first, regardless of what you do.
But the drill sergeants didn't dog you out for just, you know, talking about you guys just going to be musicians.
Oh yeah, they did. Of course they did. Although one of the drill sergeants had been combat arms and had an appreciation for the Army bands simply because of the way the bands support combat arms units, especially when they're coming back or performing for. And so he would tease us, of course, but you know, it was lighthearted. And then he would also talk the bands up. And if I remember right, it's been a long time, but there were actually 8 of us in my basic training platoon that we're heading on to the School of Music for AIT.
Now, did you deploy at all?
Yeah. So I was stationed with the 1st Armored Division Band in Wiesbaden, Germany. And we deployed in 2003 to Baghdad, to the Baghdad International Airport. And so we were stationed there from, I don't remember, my wife knows the exact day that we got there, because my wife was also in the band with me.
Oh, that's cool. Did you guys get there?
Yeah, she was the new girl, and 3 months later we got married. So
wow.
And here we are 18 years on, she's still putting up with me. So
you must be doing something right, brother.
That's right.
So now, how many years did you do in the military?
We did. I did four. She did 5.5. She was better at it than I was. But we spent 15 months, the first 2 years of our marriage, living in different tents in Baghdad. So
now, did you guys see any action? Not used to together. I mean, from
well, that's a whole other conversation, yeah, right there.
Yeah, we're not going to be talking about that here. It's a family show. But did you guys see any action in Iraq?
Well, I mean, I guess it all depends on what you define as action. I always want to be careful to never paint myself as some courageous hero or war. I even struggle with war veteran, even though we were stationed in a war zone. We were not kicking in doors. We never came under direct fire. But while we were there from about November of 2003 until we finally left in July of 2004, we were getting rocket and mortar attacks at least once daily, up to 5 times daily.
Yeah, because that's when stuff just started kicking off. So,
oh man, I'm telling you.
So now, you know, like I've talked to, you know, hundreds of people on the show, and mm-hmm. you know, when they get out, and first, this question has two parts, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, when they get out, you know, we all think that we're, you know, hua hua and all hardcore and all that, you know, but we get used to getting paid on the 1st and the 15th. You know, we used to getting paid BAQ, having 30 days paid vacation. And, you know, like one of my friends, Nick, says, you know, once your feet touch off base, the military does not give a shit about you. Mm-hmm. So, and then you know, a lot of people get into, you know, depressions because not only are they, you know, losing their career, but they're also losing their connections and people that they considered family. So what was your, and they lose their mission, you know? So what was your transition like?
Mine was a little different. Simply because my wife had enlisted after I did. And so I actually transitioned to being a military spouse immediately. So I was still sort of in the military world, and I had grown up as a Navy brat, so I was still on, you know, on familiar territory. And my last 6 months in the military, I had gotten really, really bitter about the Army. So I was just really eager to get out. It had largely to do with a handful of the NCOs in my company. You know, out in the civilian world, they say, you know, people don't quit jobs, they quit bad bosses. And yep. I had some NCOs, I think, that were a lot like that. And I'm not saying I was a great soldier, because I was never, there were certain things I was never great at. But I was really, really excited to get out and be done with it. And then when it, you know, after about a year and a half, Aaron got pregnant, and she was going to take a pregnancy discharge. And from there, I became a pastor, and I didn't really look back on my military service until just a few years ago. And it was always something that I did, but I didn't really talk a lot about it. Just didn't seem all that important at the time for a long time. And then I rediscovered camaraderie among veterans, you know, through an organization. And so it's really changed my outlook.
So when did you, you know, transition from, you know, because I know a lot of people, you know, they play piano. Like I tried piano and I could not figure it out whatsoever. I was horrible at it. Now I'm the world's okayest guitar player. Mm. But I especially love, you know, the kind of music as I get older, you know, I'm kind of more into the Eagles and stuff like that. I'm loving more acoustic music. Mm-hmm. So when did you actually start picking up the guitar again?
It was actually, I want to say it was right after we got back from Iraq in 2004. I don't know. I had always been interested in the guitar. And if you were to hear me play piano, especially back then, I would approach, you know, playing in a band kind of like a guitar player, with just the way that I would voice things and the rhythms that I would play. So I just picked up a cheap guitar at a German music store and tried to learn. Of course, it was absolutely terrible for a long time. But it just seemed like it was easier to carry around than a piano and easier to sing with than a saxophone.
And like one thing I love about acoustics, you know, I got like a cheap, I think it was like a $200 acoustic Yamaha. But it's nice because you can just take it out and go sit around the fire pit and everybody could just hang out and sing songs together. You know, I think that's one thing that, like the acoustic guitar, it kind of brings people together.
Well, so, I was largely focused on being able to lead music in a church context at that point.
Okay.
You know, contemporary Christian music is largely based on acoustic guitar. So
I'm a big Hillsong guy. I love Christian. I'm a big Christian. I love Christian artists. And somehow, as one of my friends, we were just talking when we first met in 1986 and we were stationed together, he was listening to Slayer and I was listening to Stryper.
Stryper.
and I'm a big Stryper guy to this day.
So, yeah.
And I started listening to, I got into a lot of, you know, Christian rock and Christian metal.
Man, in the 80s, my brother went through a really heavy Christian music phase, and I can remember him having Carmen tapes and Petra. I remember Petra's This Means War album. I could probably still sing along with that.
So now, when did you decide it? All right, it's time to record. How did that come about?
Wow, there's a lot of time and space in between there.
This is like just two brothers hanging out. So this is your show.
Talk about
whatever you want to talk about.
No, it's so I was.
This is like behind the music. This is the behind the music of Doug.
Yeah. So did the associate pastor, music pastor thing for about a decade, and then we moved out here to Utah. And the way I got into performing, and of course, I'd been performing my entire life, and I love performing. I love being on stage. But I moved out here for, you know, in large part for work. But I moved ahead of my family because my wife was still finishing up school. So I had about 3 months just living as a bachelor out here, and I needed to find my people, and I figured my people were probably musicians. So I went to this open mic night at just a local music venue, but there was a catch in that you could only play original music. And I didn't really have any original music. So I sat down and wrote a couple of songs just so I could have a way to participate, you know, and got some really positive feedback and encouragement, had a lot of fun. And even at that point, I wasn't thinking about performing. But as I wrote more songs, got better feedback, I just rediscovered a love for being on the stage. And it was about a year into that a buddy of mine named Andrew Wiscombe introduced me to Operation Encore, which is a military veteran music project. And they picked up one of my songs. That was my first experience recording. And prior to that, I had thought, well, maybe I could make it as a songwriter and I'll just have other people sing it. I don't really have the goods to be a frontman. But they picked up my song and I guess I just stopped lying to myself at some point and decided that I didn't really want to just write songs for other people. I wanted to perform. So that was about 5.5 years ago, I think, 5-6 years ago.
And, you know, like one thing I find, you know, that I give all you musicians credit for is to be able to sing and play at the same time. I can do one or the other. I can never do both. So, you know, was that something that you had to overcome? Did you always, did you ever have any stage fright being out in front of the band instead of being, you know, like playing the saxophone in the band?
I think everyone goes through a degree of stage fright, especially early on. But for me, I get such a high off of being on stage. It is absolutely my favorite place to be. It's honestly the place where I feel the most relaxed. I feel more like myself on stage than I do off stage. I mean, you mentioned, you know, depression and anxiety, and those have been, you know, constant companions of mine through most of my life. And the one place where I just feel completely blissful and at peace is when I have an instrument in my hand and I'm standing in front of a bunch of people. As far as playing and singing together, I think with any instrument, yeah, there comes a point where it becomes muscle memory. And it's really hard if you're still thinking about what you're doing on the instrument, then it's really hard to play and sing. But you know, you just have to work to a point where you're not really thinking about what you're doing with your hands, and then you can focus on your voice, or get to a point where you don't have to think about what you're doing with your voice and think more about your hands.
Yeah. Now, I have, you know, there's a lot of people that are listening to this are veterans, and they're also entrepreneurs. We call them vetrepreneurs.
Sure.
You know, a lot of them are speakers, coaches, writers. And, you know, even like myself, you know, I'm a creator. And sometimes I'll sit down and I'll just have like one big brain fart. And it'll take me a while to come up with content. So do you ever come up, you know, ever just sit down with the guitar and just sit there and just have like draw a blank?
more often than not, honestly, if I'm trying to write.
So then how do you work through that?
There's different creative exercises you can do to try to help with that. But what I found is that for me personally, if I can't create, what I'm usually missing is space. My brain is too cluttered. My schedule's too cluttered. And generally the thing that I need is space. So, I either need to free up the schedule, you know, take a nap, get some time away, get some alone time, or even just hopping in the car to driving. A lot of my songs, you know, got their start when I was just driving in the car by myself for a long period of time. Because, you know, your mind starts to wander, you know, especially driving down a highway. You have a long stretch of road. It's mostly straight. And, you know, turn the radio off and just create that space. And sometimes the ideas will start flowing. Sometimes you have to really work at it and massage it. But
now, what do you do, you know, are you a full-time music artist, or what do you do to pay the bills?
Well, I'm working on being a full-time music artist. We're getting closer every year. But no, I work in IT. I work for a software company here in Provo.
Okay. You know, and I have a lot of friends in Utah. I never realized how many friends I have in Utah, but I got a lot of friends in Utah, and I can't wait to come out and visit. Now, you know, a lot of people, when they get out of, you know, the military, they just have a problem, you know, finding work. Mm-hmm. But on the positive side, I think, you know, veterans are some of your best employees and some of your best business owners. So what do you think the positiveness that you've learned in the military has transitioned over to your civilian career and your music career?
I think it boils down largely to tenacity and adaptability. So, you know, I started in IT a few years ago because, you know, after years of being a pastor, we were still standing in food lines, to help feed the family, you know, cause we were, the income just simply was not there. And people, especially in small churches, don't really understand the position that they put their clergy in sometimes. And they really mistreat them in terms of money. And I'm sorry, this is a little bit of a tangent, but
no, like I said, this is just two brothers having a conversation.
Yeah. But like there was a church we were at in the church we were at in Michigan, which was the first one that I was ever on staff at. We had to be so careful with what we said because we were being paid barely above the poverty line. And if we ever said anything about us struggling, I would get called into the pastor's office and chewed out because I was complaining we weren't making enough money. Or if Aaron mentioned something about, you know, struggling to pay the bills, then that would come back to us. Or if we did anything for ourselves, like took a vacation or bought something nice, then people would look at us and would say, you know, well, is that where our money is going? You know, because they tithe, and so they think that they're entitled to our finances. And so that was a really unhealthy situation. So I had the opportunity several years ago to, and I'd had my bachelor's degree in Christian ministry, but obviously it wasn't paying the bills for us, and it just wasn't a healthy dynamic, I don't think. And the rules for the GI Bill changed, and for a long time the GI Bill, you know, you couldn't use the GI Bill for certain kinds of tech schools, and that rule changed and allowed me to go and get some IT training at a tech school, and that kick-started the career that I'm in now. So the whole story has just been simply one of adapting to whatever life throws at me. I've bathed dogs, I've sold pianos, or sold cars, or I've sold my sanity.
Okay, you're working a regular job. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, because this happens to, I'd say 99% of entrepreneurs, you know, they have to have a side hustle before it can replace your main income.
Right.
Talk to us about how the balance is. How do you balance home life? How do you balance the hustle and the grind of, you know, becoming, you know, the real Doug Lane?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I've been really blessed in that the job I'm in right now is kind of flexible with my hours. Basically, as long as I'm getting the work done, it's not a strict 9-to-5, you know, time day. So that allows a little bit of flexibility for when I need to do other things. But the honest truth is you just work at it in all of the spare hours. I've got 4 kids. I'm a dance dad, I'm always taking my girls to dance, practice almost every night. My son's in the band, and so it's a lot of late nights. It's just grind. It's not easy. Honestly, I tell people if you can do anything else, you should do something else. But I don't think I would ever really be satisfied.
You know, now, like a lot of people, you know, especially now or the last year, at least, mm-hmm. you know, here in New Jersey, you know, because of COVID, everything locked down. So how did you have to pivot with your musical career? Obviously, there's not a lot of places you weren't able to go play out. So how did that affect you?
Well, up until about October, I was able to still have a lot of gigs, not so much in Utah, but we're right next to Wyoming, and Wyoming doesn't give a crap. I kept getting gigs in Wyoming, you know, either solo or with my band. We picked up a few that's, you know, in Idaho, some private gigs. But the biggest pivot, I think, was I started focusing more on online marketing. I guess what it boils down to is this, that, I mean, I mentioned tenacity and adaptability, and I think this is where the adaptability comes in. I looked at all of my friends who are musicians in this area, and they basically threw their hands up in the air and said, well, we can't gig, we can't do anything. And I asked the question, okay, I can't gig, so what can I do? And what I realized that I could do was I could write, I could release music, I could promote it online, I could focus on my global audience, I could focus on my streaming, I could focus on building the brand, the story, the promotion, and interaction with fans. So there were a ton of things that I could do. I just couldn't go out and do that one thing. I couldn't go out and perform. So you improvise, adapt, and overcome.
I love that. So now what is, because this is one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on. I wanted to have you on last year, but I think we had a lot of scheduling conflicts and all that mm-hmm. stuff. But now you have a tour coming up. Talk to us about that. Talk to us about where you're going to be.
Well, we're calling it the Unmasked Tour for obvious reasons, but my fans voted on the name and they picked Unmasked. So we're going to go with it. And it's a shortish tour. This will be our first, my band's first tour. And of course they all work as well, but we're taking 3 weeks. We're going to start off in Wyoming and head down for several dates in Texas. We'll be playing in the Dallas, Austin, Houston, Corpus Christi, and Midland areas, with several stops in each of them. And the idea was simply born out of, I grew up in Texas, and I've never really had a chance to perform with my band there. I've always wanted to go play there.
Is the name of the band?
Well, I perform as The Real Doug Lane, okay. and they're my band. So,
okay. When is the tour?
So it'll kick off on July 2nd, and we're going to run for 3 weeks in July, and our final date will be back here on July 24th, which is a big holiday in Utah called Pioneer Day, or if you're not Mormon, then you call it Pie and Beer Day.
okay.
So we've got a big party planned for that. It'll be a great time. So yeah, folks can catch me on the road, and we'll have a good time. There's basically two different types of shows that we're doing, just depending on the stop and where we're in. For most of the bar performances we're doing, we've put together a 3-hour superset. So no breaks in the music. We've found ways to give ourselves break without, you know, it stopping for the audience. And that'll have some of my originals, it'll have a lot of my originals. And then a lot of country covers, especially the classic and the really Texan country. So we've got some, you know, Billy Joe Shaver and Guy Clark and Townes Van Zandt built into it, as well as some of the 90s country that you love. We've got some Travis Tritt in there for you.
Okay.
The other show is just a straight up concert of originals. And so they're very, very different experiences. If you have a chance to see both, I would strongly recommend seeing both, because they're such different shows. The musicians I play with are absolutely stellar. They make it really easy. They make me look good.
Okay, so now, how do we find your music? Because like I said, the last 24 hours has been nothing but Doug Lane, Doug Lane, Doug Lane, Doug Lane. And I love all your music, and I listen to every song, and I love it. So how do we find your music? And if somebody wants to get some of your music, how do they do that?
Well, the first and most important thing is to realize that if you're looking for Doug Lane music, you're going to get the wrong guy, because there's two other guys putting out music named Doug Lane. So you have to look for the real Doug Lane. And you can find me on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, anywhere you stream. If you go on Facebook or Instagram, both of them are just at The Real Doug Lane. And if you want to find tour dates, you can find that on Bands in Town. So bandsintown.com/TheRealDougLane.
I love it. Now, last question I ask I got two questions. Because when I ever talk to a man of faith like yourself, I always add an extra question. You know, we live in a crazy world still. You know, some places are still locked down. I think we get unlocked, I think, on like May 28th or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we got parents, you know, driving Uber just to put kids in their mouth, because food in their mouth because they got laid off. We got grandparents homeschooling kids. So we live in a crazy world. Mm-hmm. So if I asked the average person to do something in 7 days, they're never going to get to it. But if I ask them to take an actionable step in the next 24 hours, they're more likely. So if somebody is not hitting their goals or not reaching their goals, what is something they can do in the next 24 hours to start to right the ship?
Ask for help. Okay. I mean, that's the one thing that I have found a lot of successful entrepreneurs I know do that most people won't do. Successful people are willing to admit when they can't, and they're willing to ask for help. So if you're not meeting your goals, or if you're struggling to pay the bills, or, you know, whatever it is, humble yourself and ask for help. Because there are people around you that can help you, that can help you financially. There's organizations that can help you financially. There's people out there with the experience and the knowledge to help you get to the next step. But most people don't know the struggles that you're going through. There's a song that I really love, this from Trans-Siberian Orchestra. They have a
wonderful, love TSO.
Yeah, yeah. So on their first Christmas album, there's a song called Old City Bar, and it's about the bartender sees a homeless girl across the street and offers her help, finds out she's stranded, blah blah blah. But there's a line in there that says, if you want to arrange it in this world, you can change it. If we could somehow make this Christmas thing last by helping a neighbor and even a stranger, but to know who needs help, you need only just ask. But I think that the ask goes both ways. So I think that people need to be willing to admit when they need help. But there's also those of us who are capable of helping need to be able to ask others that we perceive struggling, hey, what can I help you with? But the ask is the thing. I think that's the biggest thing people need to do.
Okay. Now, last question that I ask certain people, because I'm a man of faith. I try to be the best Christian man I can. Of course, I fail. You know, I fail every day. But for people out there that are struggling with their faith, mm-hmm. you know, they say that if you don't feel close to God, you're the one that moved. And that he's there, you know, yesterday and today, tomorrow. He never moves. He's always there for you. So if there's somebody struggling with their faith, what is something they can do to get closer to God in the next 24 hours?
Well, first of all, I question that premise biblically, because there are many examples biblically of God removing his hand from people. So it could be that God has removed his hand from you for a season. So for first of all, I do question that premise, but what can they do to get closer to God? What I would say is, start acting out your faith. I mean, faith, someone said once, pastor friend of mine said, faith, like courage, is just a word until it's tested. The commands of the Bible were never meant to just be memorized and put on a shelf. The lessons of the Bible were never meant to be learned and put on a shelf. They should all inspire action. So what I would say is go back to scripture, and I would ask three simple questions. What is this passage, whatever passage you're reading, what does it say about God? What does it say about us? And what can I do today to act on it? And I think that just the simple act of obedience kindles and stirs faith. But you should expect that your faith is going to be tested. You should expect it. I mean, Jesus told you that you would be tested, that you would face persecution, troubles, trials. There's nothing in Scripture that says that being a Christian makes your life easy. If anything, the promises are that the eternal reward will be worthwhile, but that your life on earth could actually be harder for following Jesus.
Yep, I get it. And he said one of the gifts is long suffering.
Yep.
And people kind of skip over that one. They're like, oh yeah, I'm not going to use that one, you know. Mm-hmm. Brother, I'm so grateful. I want to thank you for coming on. But I want to thank, first of all, our sponsors, Authentically mm-hmm. American. He's a veteran. He also helps veterans that are struggling, like myself, with PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, and depression. So I want to thank them for sponsoring the show. Doug, brother, I'm so grateful. And I'm going to reach out to you right after this to find out what day you would like this podcast put out. This way it will be the best way to get ears and eyes on what you're doing and your tour. And I'm so grateful for your friendship, brother.
Likewise, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks again for having me on.
Of course, man. And let, you know, once I believe that once I have you on our show is when the relationship just starts. So yeah. I'm very grateful that you're in my corner, and I appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, likewise.
All right, God bless you and have an amazing day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Hey, guys. If you're enjoying our show, if you love what we're doing, if you would like to support us, we have a whole bunch of great stuff coming out. We have a brand new t-shirt line that's coming out. Hats, coffee mugs, any kind of swag that lets your friends know that you support Vertical Momentum and you're always looking to get better. Also, we have our new coffee brand coming out. It's called Vertical Momentum Coffee. It's ass-kicking coffee. And it will get you moving in the morning. So guys, if you're interested, go to www.richardkaufman.net. Check us out. Leave us a note. Tell us what you'd like, and we'll actually send it to you. The new website is being built. So if you guys want to, our book is out there on Amazon. It's called A Hero's Journey from Darkness to Light. Definitely check it out. It talks about my story, but it also talks about how to survive depression, how to survive addiction. All right, guys, I love you. Thank you so much for always supporting our mission, which is to save lives.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.